So, do you ever wonder just how Jesus might be received today if Jesus was to walk into this building, into this gathering? As you and I kind of grasp the importance and the impact of Jesus' words and actions in the gospel, I hope we do understand that Jesus did do and Jesus did say some really, really disruptive things. I don't know your image of Jesus, but let me tell you, Jesus was a rebel. Jesus made changes. Oh, and we all know how we like changes. There are plenty of stories that could probably name in which, at the bottom line, Jesus collided head-on with people. Like remember old Nicodemus? Nicodemus coming to Jesus for an evening chat, and before it's all over, Nicodemus is taken for a wild theological roller coaster ride that he would never, ever forget. Or when Jesus ignored the disciples' idea that all those thousands of hungry folk might be shooed on their way home, and instead Jesus set them all down and invited them to a sit-down snack. Jesus' confrontations with the scribes and Pharisees and the occupying political powers of the time. Jesus would just roll right over any of those pet ideas, expectations, long-held preconceptions on the way things are or should be. Today's gospel lesson is an important one of those collision events. Only this time, it's a quadruple header. Now, the first clash is with Peter. And then after the dust settles, Jesus referred to three other areas of sure collision. Now, this story here in Matthew's gospel is placed at the beginning of the end for Jesus' earthly ministry. From here on, Jesus is headed straight to Jerusalem. His eyes is set on a course of no turning back. He's fully committed to the road ahead of him. And here, not only does Jesus fix his path and tells what's going to happen, but he also forces each listener to look at himself or herself or their self and to consider their personal commitment to him. In his own way, here and now, and just as he always seems to still do today in our times, in this moment, Jesus is calling those who would be his disciples to remember who each belongs to. He calls each one to reflect on what is most important in this life. He calls the rich to reflect upon the poor, the young to think of the old, the strong to consider the weak, and confronts those who are full to remember the needs of the hungry. Jesus is really forcing us to see his priorities and how those priorities align with our agendas. And he wants us to see that his priorities have always belonged there, right along everything else, all along. Here in this gospel moment, we find Peter, you know, our dear brother Peter, not wanting to hear or to accept Christ's predictions regarding his ending. And like some of us might try to do, I mean, we may see Peter only trying to bolster up his friend's spirits. Maybe Peter is just trying to encourage a positive, more optimistic outcome. We might say, well, what's wrong with Peter here? Well, the wrong is that Peter was trying to prefer his will to the will of God, and he showed poor judgment. The gospel author, in a way, depicts Peter as if he were telling Christ, well, that Christ was wrong, which, of course, was awful bold and brassy of Peter, but, you know, it was Peter. And the result is a collision. Jesus turns and sternly says, "Get away from me, Satan." That had to have been a very shocking thing to hear for everyone standing around. But the point is that Jesus heard behind Peter's perhaps well-intentioned words that old siren song of Satan, a song that he had heard early on in his ministry when he was out in the wilderness for those 40 days. Jesus would have none of it. He was not going to let Peter waver him off the course. If Peter gets in the way, then Christ will not stop. They will collide. And with very sharp words, Jesus says that he is always listening to his parent God in heaven and rejects the easier call of Satan. And for those of us sitting here today, we can say thanks be to God for that, for Christ and for our salvation. Now, going further, after having put Peter down specifically, Christ goes on to speak in general to all those who were listening. And so this now becomes no small disagreement between Jesus and Peter, but Christ establishes a confrontation on a much larger scale. For beyond the question of Christ's obedience to God's will is the issue of the way that God's people will live their lives. Jesus is now getting very personal with each and every one of us. And if you listen carefully, you know that there is most likely going to be a sure collision. Whoever would save his, her, or their life will lose it. And whoever loses his, her, their life for my sake will find it. These words are not just for Peter, but they're directed to everyone. Those words cross all barriers of time and space. And those words come to us to enter into our hearts and minds today. Whoever would save his, her, their life will lose it. Whoever loses his, her, their life for my sake will find it. Jesus preaches to us in this very moment, savers lose, losers save. And he isn't talking about dollars and diamonds. He was really into real life. In the real life, things that are kept and not shared get smaller, and those which are given away enlarge. The more you keep, the less you have. The more you share, the greater the remainder. Isn't that the real truth about love, forgiveness, support, care, hope? In a very practical sense, the way that we apply Christian principles or priorities make all the difference in good and healthy families, marriages, relationships. How we live these values make all of our friendships work well. I don't think that Jesus here is just mumbling some kind of philosophical meandering. But instead, Jesus is preaching about the deepest desires and understandings of life. And thank God for that. Yet Christ isn't finished. Jesus goes on to outline other aspects of life, saying, "For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life?" It's the issue of the world versus life. I mean, I was thinking about the old kind of balance scales, you know, with the hanging trays. On one hand, Christ puts the world, you know, Lexus and all. And on the other side, he lays your life. Will it balance? My friends, I pray that you're on the way to discovering that your life outweighs everything the world possesses. One life is worth the whole world. Now, you might be shaking your head in agreement, but there are times you and I may not look like we're in agreement based on our actions. I mean, the world of the arts have plenty of examples of this life versus the world theme. Any of you remember reading The Devil and Daniel Webster? Great works of art, theater, music, dance, have explored the values of the balance against something in this world. Jesus says, your life is worth more. Your life is worth more than the entire world. Nothing is more precious than you and the full life that God intends for you. By word and by example, Jesus stated this conviction all the way to the cross. And then there is that first statement made here by Jesus, which I passed over until we are at this point. He says, if any want to be my disciples, let them deny themselves and take up the cross and follow me. Now, if we had started with the taking up the cross thing, there would have been most likely immediate collision. Cross-bearing. Cross-bearing is not one of our most favorite human activities. Few very find it acceptable. We like avoiding crosses, ignoring them, escaping them. But to take up the cross voluntarily. And then Jesus adds, follow me. Follow Christ, really? Follow where he goes, really? To the Garden of Gethsemane before Pilate, face the accusations of Caiaphas and Herod and the torture of the soldiers, go to Golgotha, and then, my friends, keep on following. Enter the tomb. Leave again. And make that triumphant descent into hell, following Christ all the way. Be with Christ in that upper room of John 20 and experience the great 40 days before Jesus' ascension. And keep following. The journey is upward from there. The gospel message here is to follow Christ to the very end. For in your death, you will do just that. Just look again at these words from the gospel. They are very important ones for every Christian. And listen to what they say to you. Deny yourself. Now, that doesn't mean giving up chocolate. What else can it mean but that by the power of the Holy Spirit, you must be determined to stop colliding with the will of God? If we live by faith, then faith it must be. Faith, not me. If we are saved by grace, then grace it will be. Grace, not my works. If we are called to service, then let service claim our commitment. Service, not personal gain. This is how we deny ourselves. Take up your cross. Take up your cross. It's not heavy. It's the stuff out of which God makes all kinds of things. When I carry it with God, it's light. When I follow my human desires for resisting God's holy hand, then the weight becomes unbearable. The surest way to really bear my cross is to realize that I don't really have one anymore. Because Jesus Christ has already taken it to the place where all crosses are laid down and left, the very heart of God. Are you in collision with Christ? God forbid it. No human being ever walks away from a collision with Christ as a victor. But if we opt to abide with him, then I believe that Jesus' eyes are my eyes, God's will's my will, God's victory my victory, and Jesus' submission to God's good intent becomes mine. Oh, friends, may we each be able to pray today this very simple prayer. I fight no more, Lord, but only desire to follow where you will lead me. I fight no more, Lord, but only desire to follow where you lead me.